And we can see it in an amazing variety of people. People don't talk about this anymore because we remember the other aspects of these, some of these great leaders. But you can look at many of the great leaders of the time. Winston Churchill, when he was in the Asquith administration, was a prime proponent of positive eugenics in England. Teddy Roosevelt in America, Woodrow Wilson, Calvin Coolidge, many of our early presidents during this time, presidents of the United States during this period, early 20th century, were strong proponents of eugenic thinking in public policies. They openly worried that the professional classes were not reproducing in sufficient numbers because women weren't having enough babies, people were moving into professional families, they weren't having enough children. Progressive sociologist and good friend of Teddy Roosevelt, Edward A. Ross, called it race suicide, and it crept into Teddy Roosevelt's speeches, that race suicide was going on because the able women were now going to college and weren't producing enough kids, that professional families weren't having enough children as they had in the past, and they were going to be swamped by the inferior products of their own race. That is, as the term would come out, the lower classes of whites would keep producing working families, but these better classes wouldn't produce enough. Education efforts taught students the value of eugenic mate selection. You can look it back to biology and civics textbooks of the time, and you'll see eugenic mating advice and the importance for having large families. Organizations, even county fairs, would hold fitter family contests and eugenic baby contests, much like they would give prizes for the best sheep at a 4-H contest, for the best family, the biggest eugenic family, the one producing the best children, the most kids, ways to try to propagate reproduction by the fit. Eugenic fitness was proposed as a prerequisite for marriage, and many states adopted laws requiring a eugenic test before a person could get married. Some churches, such as the Episcopal Church, actively proposed ideas that only eugenically fit people could be married in a proper church wedding. Some countries adopted tax and employment policies to encourage its able citizens to have children. Well, that was the positive eugenics. There was also negative eugenics, the other side, the dark side of eugenics, as it were, that sought less children from the unfit. Every single American state and most Western countries adopted policies during this period of sexually segregating certain supposedly dysgenic classes, typically the mentally retarded, during their breeding years so they could not reproduce. 35 American states and many European countries instituted compulsory programs of sexual sterilization for the mentally ill and retarded, for habitual criminals, like people who committed crimes three times would be sterilized in prison, for epileptics. Germany's programs, which were adopted during the Weimar Republic, were later extended under the Nazi era to include Jews and gypsies and other groups, disfavored groups. During the period from 1900 to 1960, some 60,000 Americans were sterilized under compulsory state programs, and many more were sterilized under voluntary programs that were when people were brought in, say, by their parents for sterilization because of some supposed eugenic defect. Such programs were even upheld as constitutional by the United States Supreme Court in 1927, in a case involving Carrie Buck at a Virginia mental institution who was sterilized against her will under evidence that both her mother and her grandmother had been mentally retarded, and she was mentally retarded, was the claim, though she really wasn't, we know later. Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote a decision for a nearly unanimous Supreme Court that said that this sacrifice was appropriate for society because, as he put it, three generations of imbeciles are enough. Partly on eugenics grounds, Congress passed laws curtailing the immigration of non-Nordic stock that were seen as inappropriate for North America. Nazi Germany moved from eugenic sterilization to euthanasia. And German geneticists joined in supporting these racial purity policies, and we can go back and look that biologists joined the Nazi Party at a higher rate than other professional groups. Except for the Catholic Church, opposition to eugenics was disorganized and ineffective until the 1930s, when Nazi practices discredited the lot. Then, gradually, social scientists and later geneticists began turning from these ideas as too simplistic to explain complicated, multifactorial traits and abilities of people. By the end of the World War II, social Darwinism was morally bankrupt. But for a period, for a half century, it had profoundly influenced how scientifically informed governments treated their most vulnerable citizens.